got a question for Chris Berman. 800-878-PLAY, 800-878-7529. That was Jerry Kramer talking about those two or three jerks. Chris, as you look back on the year with all the incredible, I consider this the best NFL season I've watched because it's been so unpredictable. The caliber of the games has been so amazing, and every different week has been a new chapter. Who have been the two or three jerks in the season that have marred an otherwise perfect year?
Oh, you want to bring me on and talk bad? Why?
Because you're always so positive.
Well, we turn our head to Dallas, of course, where a lot of the stuff coming out of there doesn't need to be about one receiver. I mean, they had a very interesting season. But yet it was always, well, is the ball going here enough, or et cetera, et cetera. So obviously that, you know, we could use a little less of
I agree with you there.
Of 81 in Dallas.
Let me get you off the seat here. Let's talk about the Marty Schottenheimer AJ. Okay, how about the Marty Schottenheimer AJ Smith thing, where at least it looks like Marty's been given another year, but it came very close, and I talked to Len Dawson about this, extremely close, because the Spanos were saying we have to go deep in the playoffs, and Marty was the best coach I ever played for. They made some stupid mistakes. Here's Howie Long, and maybe this will get us on a more positive note.
You know, I know the relationship there with him and the general manager is strained at best, but I think it's hard to let go of a 14-2. I think what you saw was you saw a New England Patriots team, and I think a microcosm of who the Patriots are is the Troy Brown play, you know. And I think this is a San Diego team that just got there for the first time, and it's a learning experience.
Don't you think that with one more year, maybe it is indeed what Philip Rivers needed, the San Diego team will get over, and Marty can stop having to worry about that negative jinx?
Well, my goodness, Nick, they certainly have a wonderful team. I mean, nobody wins 10 games in a row, you know, from late October into the playoffs. Nobody does that. Yes, the answer is, look, LaDainian Tomlinson, I mean, he was special several years ago before a lot of people knew it, and boy, we all know it now. Phillip Rivers played okay in the playoffs. I mean, the defense, that front seven, New England's plan wasn't to stop running. They just said, uh-oh, we can't run. We better try something else. So the answer is, look, it is high. I agree with Howie. I mean, if you'd ask me that, I mean, how do you fire 14-2? I do know the background, and it's we have a Super Bowl-caliber team, but we can't get over this hump. What 14-2 was not 11-5 on a team we think is great and won the West and then lost. So I understand why you know, Marty's still there. He should be. Marty's a credit to the guy, 200 wins, et cetera. I mean, you know him better than I do. You played for him. He worked with us a couple of years. I got to know him a little better, you know, because he was sitting with us every Sunday. So that being said, you know, now sometimes San Diego, and you know this, Nick, the teams that had, like, last year's Colts, 13-0, you know, but yet didn't even make it to the championship game. The Pittsburgh, when the Ben was a rookie, 15-1, beaten by New England in the championship game. Sometimes you come back at 12-4, just to pick a number, and are more grizzled and more hardened and are better off in January than you were when you were 15-1 and 14-2, and that's probably the boat San Diego will fall in.
Yeah, and I think that certainly the second version of that, the second year, is the Indianapolis Colts. They had last year and the playoffs stolen from them because of the distraction and the heartache and the tragedy of the suicide of Tony's son. And I think under all of this is the motivation to right that ship, to recorrect and rescore their direction. And this year is the year for them to do that.
Well, they're also, I agree, although we shouldn't forget, Nick, although in the playoffs, you know, they came in as the third seed, they had played about 500 ball from middle of November on, et cetera, et cetera, they were the last team to lose a game at 9-0. I mean, they were the last one. So we forget that because the games they're winning were by 7, by 4, by 3, by 1. That may serve them better, Nick, this year, the way that they've had to not so much look. Peyton Manning, I'm not worried about, it's a close game. I'm worried about him getting nervous. No, I'm not worried about that. But when you win a bunch of games 40-14, for example, you're not managing, you're not doing certain things in the fourth quarter that you might be if every game is 7 or 4 or 2 or 1. And you saw them manage the clock in the Ravens game, you know, from 17 minutes left, even though they were up by like 6 or 3 or whatever it was. So this on paper isn't as good a Colts team, but maybe better equipped to finally take it all the way. Plus, I mean, the unspeakable last year, I don't even know where you put that on a scale. Pretty high.
Yep. Well, we're joined by a guy who's going to talk to us in a few minutes about the Australian Open, but I thought because his father played for the Giants, because he loves football, because he's the Ronnie Lott of tennis. Luke, when you listen to this story, the psychology, which we talk about all the time with you, sometimes the player that's had it all, that's won every single thing but can't quite make it to the top and has that 15-1 season, but the one thing does not take him over the top to the championship. Sometimes, give us an example of where that can actually bode well. Like the Colts this year, I think, are hungrier in the playoffs than they were last year.
I think they rely on their experience. I think any athlete, when they're in the crunch and they're still having to achieve one more step, in the, whether it's the media, whether it's the fans, they have something to prove. And it's every practice. It consumes you in every part of your life that your dream to be the best, to hold that trophy, to wear that ring for the rest of your life, that consumes you until you get there. And that's exactly what Peyton Manning feels every single day until he gets there.
Let's talk about that, Chris. The Peyton Manning against Brady, it just seems, of course, he's had 325 yards a game the last two times. They've won both games. But the memory of those losses in the playoffs, how much does that play? How much do you think that will play this time around?
It's played, he thinks about it every day. I think we're right. I mean, Peyton is in the thing to win. I mean, he's going to have all the records when he retires. But the record that he wants is a trophy above his head, at least one, and we'll worry about more than one after that. So how much will it when he goes to the huddle and he sees Teddy Bruschi or Mike Vrabel, you know, familiar faces from the 03 and 04 games? Will he process, I'm getting set up again by these Patriots? No, I don't think in that way, Nick. But I think in his preparation, he'll think about some of the type of moves and how late they make him on him with 8 seconds left on the clock, and here comes the double shift back there. I think that all goes into his think tank, which is pretty deep. Now, again, he's not with his chin on his knee, but he's cognizant of, my God, I know I have to think harder than I've ever thought 60 minutes worth. And that's not, I haven't even talked about taking a snap and running and throwing yet. So that much goes in. The fear of failure, I think it's someone at Peyton's caliber, the want to prove, Luke points out, absolutely. The fear of failure, which sounds like redundancy department, but I don't think he's going to be out there shaking, though.
Okay, let's go to some specifics here. I believe that Deuce McAllister is going to be a major issue because of the lack of a Mike Brown and a Tom Harris there for the Bears. It's as if, and we said this before on the show, Mike Brown is in some ways the Bob Sanders of that Chicago defense. Without him, they're not the same.
He's such a great thinker. He's a guy that's always in a great spot. However, they have played whatever it is, Nick, 8-10 games without him. But absolutely, him and Tommy Harris are, well, it's like baseball up the middle. You know, I mean, your defense up the middle, if that's not good, you're going to be losing a lot of things. So, but there is a guy in the middle that's pretty darn good. And I look, if the Bears win, and Brian Urlacher is going to have one of those, I don't like to say Dick Butkus-type games, but there he is, Chicago. I mean, monsters of the midway. You know, one of those 14-15 tackle games that goes down in lore at Soldier Field. So he's still sitting there. And for that reason, he knows that the middle of their defense is not what it was when they were rolling off 7-0. So I don't think that there's going to be a cakewalk up the middle of the way everybody thinks. I think Urlacher is in for a big, big, maybe legendary game. We'll see.
Well, before we let you go, my friend, and we really appreciate knowing how busy your schedule is, give us your picks for this weekend.
Well, you're a day early on the Swami, so I'm still, you know, I still got my witch's brew going here, Nick. I got them all right last week, at least with the, I tried all four road teams, so they didn't all win, but they all kept it close or won, if you know what I mean. So right now, and I've got to do a little more work on the NFC game, I'm leaning towards Chicago, although we haven't even talked about the Saints story and how wonderful, and by the way, they're an offensively wonderful team to watch with a quarterback that's great and who played in the Big Ten, so this isn't news to him, you know, this type of weather, Drew Brees. Right now, I'm leaning towards an Urlacher game like that, and if that's the case, then the Bears come out on top 4, 5, 6, but I got another 24 hours yet till the Swami, you know, really feels the magic carpet. Now, I picked New England from the start of the season, Nick, to play Philly in the Super Bowl. So there's that pick. I mean, they're alive. I can't say, well, they're going to get to the Super Bowl, but they're going to lose. I mean, so New England, do they have a chance to make the run and win 4 in 6 years like the famous Pittsburgh Steelers? It's incredible. Yes, they do.
And it's possible.
It is, but at the same point, don't you think at some point Peyton Manning and Tony Dungy are going to win one of these? And it's not for lack of trying, but my pick was New England in September, so there I am with that. So now we're looking for the fridge 20 years later in a Super Bowl rematch. At least that's what I'm thinking a day before the official Swam.
Well, Swami, Boomer, Chris, we love you, buddy.
All right, Nick.
Thanks for joining us.
Happy New Year, okay?
Happy New Year to you.
Let me be the last to wish you a Happy New Year.
Appreciate it, buddy.
I'll see you.
Thank you. Chris Berman, Luke Jetson, thanks for being so patient, buddy. What's going on down there? The women have been doing a little playing, haven't they?
That's right. Maria Sharapova is on tap for today. It's already Friday morning, almost 6 o'clock, and one of the things going into the first weekend of any slam is the players have gotten rid of the rust from the off season, the first couple rounds. We've got a huge heavyweight fight with Roddick and Safin, two former Grand Slam champions, looking to regain Grand Slam form. It's really looking good down here in Melbourne, Australia.
Well, tell me, when you say shaking off the rust, Sharapova shook off the rust in about 10 pounds in the 120-degree heat. Is there any reason why they don't close the roof and make it a little bit more human?
Well, they're trying to keep it fair for everybody. Indoor tennis is completely different from outdoor tennis, and as soon as you close that roof, the dynamics change, just like playing outdoor football and kicking indoors. I mean, it's much nicer kicking that dome. The advantage when it goes indoors, the player with the big serve really gets that ball through. The elements don't play with the toss, doesn't play with the ball. So all of a sudden, the player that wants to be in the heat, in the wind where it's ugly, they lose that tactical advantage, and now the big player with the big hitting strokes has the advantage. So the tournament tries to keep it as fair as possible. Well, you start with the roof open. Unless it rains, we're gonna play all the way through. Hey, the other opponent, Camille Penn, who had to play Sharapova, had to deal with the same conditions. So Sharapova didn't come in prepared for these types of conditions. You have to come in physically and mentally solid to win.
Is it possible to literally get more conditioned during the tournament itself, or is it too late?
No, yeah, a little bit, but you have to go in the situations. Roddick spent time in Hawaii, heat and humidity, a month before this all went down. He's prepared for this. Other players were in Europe where it's cold. Other players were in other parts of the globe where it wasn't as hot. You have to prepare a month out for that battle.
Who's your pick of the women's side?
Well, I like Sharapova. I think she had a tough match. She'll win there. And on the men's side, it's Roger Federer. That's the easy pick. But, you know, look for a guy like Nadal, the number two seed. He's rough. There are a lot of rough players out there. The Australian Open on almost like 24 hours on ESPN and ESPN2. It's some great tennis.
Well, when we come back, let's get a little bit more from our friend from Down Under, IBM Advantage, Luke Jensen. Stay with us.